Time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor and publisher of The Timber Jay, an independent newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, thanks for being back.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's talk about a story you covered this week that is really pretty interesting, something that we don't think about that much. The border of Minnesota and Canada in International Falls and some of the things that are coming through there.
Right. Yeah, you know, that's obviously a very, very busy border crossing. And, you know, the amount of goods that are shipped through there really is incredible. I mean, you have both, obviously, you know, the highway connection, so you have trucks going back and forth across the border. And, of course, you also have that major rail line, the Duluth, Winnipeg, and Pacific line there. And, you know, so you're talking about a huge amount of cargo that is shipped back and forth. And one of the things that, you know, a lot of times when we think about borders, we think about the movement of people. But, you know, the movement of those goods also has a significant impact. And one of the things that they're working on there continuously is to try to head off, you know, the introduction of a lot of various invasive, potentially invasive type, both plants and insects that might be coming into Minnesota in some of those shipments. You know, some of the goods that are coming in, you know, if it's just stuff coming in from Canada, we're probably not, you know, too concerned about it. But, of course, you know, a lot of those goods originate elsewhere, you know, Asia, China, places like that. You know, there's clearly the potential for both insects and plant, you know, seeds from plants that might be a problem here in Minnesota for them that they could, you know, come in on those shipments. And certainly it happens routinely. I mean, it's one of the reasons that we have so many issues with invasive species around, you know, Minnesota and around the world, really, is just because of the constant movement of goods all around across borders. And it's interesting. We talked to some of the folks up there in International Falls with the U.S. Customs and Border Protection and, you know, about the work that they do and how they try to head off some of this stuff. And they've had some successes, you know. Just recently, in fact, they found a shipment that had an insect known as a brown plant hopper. This insect is from Asia. And it over there, it's highly destructive of rice. And the concern here is that it could, if it got established in Minnesota, it could be very destructive of wild rice. So obviously this is something that we don't want to see here. And fortunately, they were able to detect, you know, some of these insects that were coming in. Unfortunately, you know, it's a continuing fight to try to address this stuff. And in many cases, it seems like it's a you know, looking for a needle in a haystack when you think of just the volume of material that crosses that border. And but they have very low-tech ways of detecting these things. I mean, in most cases, it's they're just using flashlights and just their eyes, and they're just, you know, looking for, you know, a pallet maybe that that might have seeds, you know, if it's a rough-cut pallet, maybe it holds some seeds in it. Or they might see some insect holes, and they're, you know, looking for that, and then trying to find out, you know, what's going on here. So it's just a continual searching, and then of course, you know, they have established shippers who they generally trust, who they kind of are, you know, they allow some of the ones that they know generally do a good job. They'll let them through relatively quickly. And they kind of focus on, you know, maybe shipments that are a little more suspect or they're not, you know, from as reliable of shippers. And so they'll maybe focus a little bit more on those. But it was interesting. I mean, just they were talking about how just by angling the way they hold the flashlight, you know, they're more likely to be able to spot, you know, an insect or seeds in whatever it is they're looking at. You know, but it's funny because we really don't think about this and about the potential of, you know, the international trade. I mean, obviously there's pluses to it, and there's also, you know, potential minuses such as, you know, bringing some of these insect pests in. They said also just recently, just in July, they found two or three shipments that had longhorn beetles. These are Asian longhorn beetles, and these insects are very destructive to orchard plants and forests. So, you know, this is another species that obviously we don't want to get established here in Minnesota. It's considered one of the most destructive beetles in the U.S. right now. So, you know, clearly this work is important, and it's ongoing, and it's kind of never-ending.
Hmm. You know, it didn't make sense to me, you saying it was low-tech, until, you know, they don't know what they're looking for. So how could you train a dog? How could you use electronics if you don't know what it is you want to find there?
Yeah, that's really true.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to another story you covered this week that affects all of us in northern Minnesota. The deer season. What is going to be happening from the DNR?
Yeah, well, the you know, we've had two back-to-back winters that have been relatively severe, and that certainly had an impact on deer numbers, and that is going to reflect in the number of antlerless permits that the DNR is going to be issuing here in northern Minnesota anyway. And most of the permit areas up in our neck of the woods, kind of St. Louis County, Northern Lake, Coochaching County, places like that, many of those are going to be either bucks only. The deer permit areas there are either going to be designated as bucks only, or they're going to be, they'll have a limited lottery, which means they'll give out a certain number of antlerless permits through a lottery system. And the number of permits they're going to be issuing in a lot of these places where they still are designated as lottery, the numbers are down quite a bit from what they've offered in the past. So hunters, the bottom line is, I think hunters are going to have to look for antlers a lot more than they worried about maybe in the last a few years. So that's you know, just one impact from having a couple more severe winters. Certainly, it's been a little bit tough on the deer, and you know, the deer populations in this region are really largely dependent on the severity of winters. You know, the deer are kind of at their physical limit in terms of the conditions that they can withstand. So when we have a severe winter up here, you know, you can lose a significant portion of your deer herd. So that's the issue here, and if we have a milder winter or a couple milder winters here, now you can start rebuilding your population. But, you know, on the other hand, if the deer numbers are down, that's good for moose. And actually, we've been seeing and hearing reports of quite a bit more moose in the area in the last few months. So that's been good news. We've had a number of people reporting seeing moose with, you know, cow moose with twin calves. We've had a couple reports of those recently right around the tower area. So that's been encouraging. So, you know, it's a balance always between those different populations.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to our final story from you today. Some new information about the trumpeter swans research done.
Right, yeah. There's a new research effort to try to learn a little bit more about trumpeter swans, and they're, right now the plan is to put radio transmitters on about 90 trumpeter swans all together, and this would be across the upper Midwest, actually, but most of the largest number of those would be placed on swans from Minnesota, and they're hoping to get a little bit more information about their migration, about kind of year-round movements, also some of the mortality risks that they face, and also their habitat use. One of the things that they don't know right now, they don't have a good sense of where all of the trumpeter swans from Minnesota go, you know, during the winter. You know, some of them they know go down around Arkansas and Missouri. But some of them also stay in Minnesota, but they're just wanting to get a better sense of, you know, where those swans are headed so they can, you know, provide some kind of management possibly in areas where they winter to help ensure that they're, you know, that they successfully winter in those areas. But one of the things that I know that the folks who are involved with this, with the trumpeter swans right now, are really touting is the fact that this has been a remarkable success story. You know, back in the 1960s, most researchers thought that the, or wildlife managers thought that the trumpeter swan was headed for extinction. You know, there were only a few dozen that were known to exist in one little area in Montana. And but then they found a modest population of a few thousand in Alaska, and using that population, they were able to do some reintroduction in some areas, including Minnesota. And the reintroduction efforts in Minnesota have been the most successful of any state. We have now an estimated population in the summer of 30,000 trumpeter swans, which is just amazing. To think, you know, how this species has been recovered. It's just a great conservation success story. And now, I mean, trumpeter swans, we used to get so excited to see a trumpeter swan, and now they're kind of just routine. You know, you see them all the time. And that's a great thing because they really are a spectacular bird. They're actually the largest member of the waterfowl group of birds, and some of the largest ones. The largest trumpeter swans have a wingspan of over 8 feet. So I mean, these are really enormous birds. And they're so impressive when you hear them. When you see them flying and you hear them call, that trumpet-like call, it's just, they really are spectacular. So it's really good to see the success they've had. And now this research will give wildlife managers the opportunity to you know, better manage for their continued success.
Yeah, we all need a little good news story like that. Listen for those trumpets.
Absolutely.
It's Marshall Helmberger. It's been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. Marshall, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.
Nothing but a dream I had.